people either loathe me or they admire me.
Man can be God.
That's a bunch, that's wacky.
Yeah.
Chuck, I can't get enough of your show.
I don't know how old you are, Chuck.
You think you're always right.
With sexuality's rampant.
Finally, Chuck, a show that takes a real moral stand and tells them like it is.
I'm Boston. It's time now for your radio voice of reason. It's the Chuck Moore Show on WROL AM 950, the voice of Boston. Talking Chuck, dial 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. And now, Chuck.
And yes, that would be I, Chuck Moore, AM 950 WROL, the voice of Boston. 617-770-3030 is the number if you'd like to join us. If anyone was listening a few minutes ago and they heard me on with Mayor Flynn, they'll know that for some reason, as I come into the studio today, I'm having somewhat of a voice problem. I don't know what it is, but I practically lost my voice in the middle of my comments. So maybe it's running around in this slushy weather with bad shoes. I don't know. But so I'm glad we have a good talker joining us this evening. My guest is John Corbin. He's the author of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. John, thanks for joining me this evening.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Chuck.
My pleasure. You know, look, I mean, I think that the listeners to this program understand that that our nation, our civilization, our culture was founded on Christian principles, and probably even more specific than that, Calvinist principles, as they were brought into the Bay Colony by John Winthrop, and when he had a very kind of a vision of the city on the hill, a society that was based upon moral strictures, a society that was based upon the ineffable word of the creator of the universe. And I think that it's also fair to say that those principles were incorporated into the Constitution of the United States. Now, I guess that what, I mean, my question to you is, can you elaborate a bit on the nature of the founding of the Republic and how it is concomitant with Christian values?
Well, this book is one more about public policy than history, I'll have to say. But the thing that's really interesting to me about the American civilization is that we are truly anomalous in the history of the world. There's just been no nation that has risen quite like America. And what you said is absolutely true, in that we have a very different founding than most other nations. What's interesting and key for me, as I look down through our channels and our past, is that Americans sometimes get so myopic in their own vision of the world that they fail to see the tyranny and oppression that goes on around them, even in the 21st century, the 20th century, and all the way back to the time of Christ and beforehand. And they fail to appreciate exactly what was started here in the United States, even as a colony of England. It was just an incredible story.
Oh, it is. And I think that perhaps America is the most religious and the most Christian civilization in history. And there's a lot of things that we can account for that. But I think one of the main things is that while our founding fathers, regardless of their level of belief and whether they were born again or whether they were deists, they knew the Bible, and they did nothing that contradicted the Bible in the founding of the Republic, and they ran under the assumption that the American people were literate in the Bible. And deriving from that, they came up with the concept, or they recognized the concept in nature, that, as Jefferson so eloquently put, that we're endowed by the Creator, God, with inalienable rights, as opposed to every other civilization and all the tyrannies that are around us, where the principle is that the state is supreme and that the state doles out rights. Somehow the state creates rights. And I think that that is consonant both with the Old Testament and with the ministry of Jesus.
Very true. And in fact, our nation is so different than other nations because we actually believe that there are rights antecedent to the state. At least those of us who are conservative or of a libertarian framework, we don't see the state as the one who's granting us rights, that gives us the right to have our property or gives us a feudal tenement that we can stay on that's really owned and possessed by the king all along. At least in principle, we want to think that we're free people, that we have rights, and we put a constitution in force in order to protect us from government. And we even have things like the Second Amendment, which is now all but eroded to give us the right to even overthrow government if necessary.
Right, and also the Second Amendment was put in place, I think, as a natural, as one of the many systems of checks and balances in power that is not generally acknowledged today. Another one was the jury system. But I think that what you're describing is the view of the founders, which was that government does not grant rights. People, rights are inalienable, rights are natural, rights have come from the creator of the universe, blessed be he. And that governments basically are nothing more than a construct to preserve and protect those rights.
What we've found is that for the most part nowadays, governments are becoming more predatory. And unfortunately, even in the United States, the government has become more and more a predator than it is a protector of our rights. Most countries around the world only know governments as predators. I lived in South America for almost 5 years and was surprised by a number of things. One is the absolute generosity of Americans in volunteerism. I had no idea what a generous, religious, voluntaristic society we had until I lived down there. But the other is just this whole concept of rights. Those people are used to being told what rights they have, and the state, it literally gives these things to them. And I see it creep in up here, unfortunately, especially when I talk to people on the abortion debate. You know, most of the people in the world who think, in the United States that I talk to that are just men on the street, think that abortion's about defining when a fetus becomes a human being. But for the upper echelons of academia, none of those people deny the fact that at one point in their life they were a zygote or an embryo or a fetus, and that they were human. They just deny that the state or some other social apparatus had not given them rights until they passed through the birth canal. So yes, they were a human being 5 minutes before birth, but they were also a person after birth, and they weren't until they're a person, they can be aborted. And so the idea they had is that the state is the great grantor of the right, or some other public policy or some other social apparatus, depending on who you speak with. And to me, this is an abomination. This is against everything America's ever stood for, which is to protect our rights that we have inalienably. I was so shocked some years ago to actually be on a libertarian professor's list, and although I don't agree many times at many points with libertarians, especially on social views, I'm always keen to listen in on their candid discussion. And a straw poll was taken of the 90-odd professors on the list, and something close to 88 or 89 of them thought that Thomas Jefferson and Locke and the rest of the founders were wrong in saying that there were such a thing as inalienable rights. And this is a scary thing because the what trickles down from the top in academia goes right into the public school system, it goes into government, it goes into business, and it begins to invade the premonitions and thinking of American people.
You know, I mean, I think that what you're describing is the Gramscian influence. I only bring that up because I wrote a book called The Gramsci Factor.
Yes,
and also it's a replacement of the idea of natural law and God-given rights with Marxist ideas, dialectical materialism, that somehow rights are something that are created in the environment by power, and that therefore when you have this alleged, they have this whole conspiracy theory about ruling powers, they create rights or they create perceptions, and that the people have to then rise up and do another creation of perceptions, but there's no absolute rights. There's no rights that exist before, after, and during, you know, that transcend the nature of the environment. And they are of a totalitarian mindset because once you accept that principle, then you have elites who then acting so-called in the interest of people, they impose rights and that they feel entitled and they feel, in fact, justified in deciding which rights are there and which rights aren't.
Some of these claims to rights or positive rights nowadays are so ludicrous. I remember when I was doing my grad studies in the early 90s, so there are actually laws in Virginia or legislation that's in Virginia now that says if a person has a working air conditioner in his apartment when he moves in, he has a right to it and can sue his landlord if it ever goes out and can require some kind of remedy at law because he has given it an absolute right, a positive right to air conditioning. And this is just one of the many insane sorts of rights that are doled out as entitlements today.
Well, those are rights that have been decided by men, and it's the it's the great question that actually Whitaker Chambers posed in his book Witness: God or man?
Mm.
And we choose God, and Whitaker Chambers chose God after having been a communist. But when you have rule by men, you have tyranny, ultimately and eventually, or at least a slide toward it. Now, you brought up, of course, the abortion question, which I see the protection of the unborn child as another step toward the realization or the recognition of natural rights. And that was part of what this country was supposed to be all about. The first step was the American Revolution itself, which said that people no longer have to be ruled by a king or by an autocrat, but that we can have self-rule, that we're capable of ruling our own lives and then basically putting forth a structure by which we can organize a government. And then things progressed from there. But anyway, we have to take a brief break. My guest is John Coben. The book is Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. You're welcome to join us at 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
If you're among the many who have a less than perfect credit rating, you know full well that a missed or late payment can cost you a lot more money, time, and aggravation when trying to apply for or refinance a mortgage. But at Full Spectrum Lending, we don't think that should ever be the case. Rather than penalize you for past credit problems, Full Spectrum wants to help you use your home's equity to consolidate bills, lower your monthly payments, or even put extra cash in your pocket. Full Spectrum can offer loans to borrowers who require more flexibility because of self-employment, high consumer debt, or tarnished credit. And because they're affiliated with the nation's largest independent residential mortgage lender, Full Spectrum can offer a great selection of competitively priced, fixed and adjustable rate loans and home equity lines of credit. Give them a call at 888-777-9831 for a free, no-obligation home loan consultation. That's 888-777-9831.
We're back as Mike's Movers face off against the living room furniture.
Tom, after that oak bedroom set, their shoulders were looking sore. But here they go.
McCoy picks up the coffee table, passes to Polanski. Now it's Anderson reaching for the ottoman.
Talk about turnarounds. These guys are moving with ease.
Deep before play, they rubbed on plenty of ultra-strength Bengay.
With that deep penetrating heat, there's not a stiff arm in the house.
And now it's Polanski and McCoy with a sleeper sofa down the hall.
Yes, they pack it away. Whoa.
For muscle and joint pain, put relief into action with ultra-strength Bengay. Use as directed for temporary relief.
Today's Talk for Adults, informative talk,
issues that matter to you.
We are the voice of Boston.
We are AM 950.
Informative talk from the radio voice of reason, back to the Chuck Moore Show, right here on WROL, AM 950.
And we are back. John Coben is my guest. The book is Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. You're welcome to join us, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Just to quickly wrap up what I was saying, John, you know, the founding of the country was a move in the direction of recognizing God-given rights. The Civil War was a move toward abolishing chattel slavery, the right of one person to own another, which is not anything that exists in natural law. And I think that the abortion question is the final frontier, which is the right of the unborn child. Anyway, we've got a caller here. We've got Bill on the line from the cab. Bill, thanks for calling.
Hi, Chuck. How you doing?
Well, thanks.
I'd like to ask either you or your guest if you've read David Barton's Original Intent.
John?
No, I haven't.
I have a book by him that talks about how when they he compared his statistics that he primarily got from the Department of Health and Human Services that show what's happened from 1963.
64, yeah. Well,
64,
that's in the
when
book.
They took prayer out of school, and how the utter destruction and degradation and debauchery of our young people.
Right, right. But in fact, John would appreciate it because it's an extraordinary marshalling of facts to show that the founders were Christians, not deists, and that they wanted the Christianity, you know, broadly understood to be intertwined with our founding documents. No doubt about it. I mean, he proves it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And so I recommend it highly. I should have him on.
Yeah, good recommendation.
Me?
Good recommendation, Bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
See ya.
All right. John Coben's my guest, Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. John, what does a Christian do in a situation where the government is usurping power from the sovereign individual. I mean, how do they reconcile that? I mean, do we rise up and have a rebellion, or how do we deal with these encroachments?
Well, this really is the 50-cent question, and it's the most difficult question, I think, for evangelicals and Catholics and others who would be in the pale of Christianity, or Christendom as it's called today. And you hear answers on both sides of the fence. I tend to come down pretty strongly and say if a person thinks that a revolution would be wise and possible, then he probably should be able to go ahead and partake, much as our founding fathers did. But there are others of Christians who would advocate, no, that's absolutely wrong. In all cases, we need to stand and abide by whatever authority that is there. What I try to do in Bible and Government is a couple things. One is to sort of shake people up and say, look, the whole world is not like America in terms of its government. And I'm not thinking that even that American's government is perfect by any means.
Right.
We have 40 million unborn children that have been slaughtered that will attest to that fact alone, as well as many other things that are difficult in our own nation's government. But still, the American civilization, as bad as one might point out things in it, it's still way better than the vast majority, if not close to all other governments currently or in the past. In fact, the Apostle Paul and Peter had to face it as an atrocious kind of government and Christ. And people somehow make the mistake of equating all governments of all times, all cultures, as something more or less similar to what the American experience is. And even if you call them on it and they say, well, we really don't think that, they tend to treat governments as if it's the same thing. And that's a problem I've noted over time. And I want to explode that myth. Mm-hmm. America's anomalous. It's different. There's some treasure here that needs to be preserved, and we need to be careful to do so.
Yeah.
The other thing is to take a look at what the nature of the state really is. And in the introduction to the book, I point out Professor Rummels of the University of Hawaii, political sciences there, his work. The guy has done nothing his entire career, and he's now basically retired since the end of the 40s. The guy's not nothing but count bodies of people
right.
that have been killed by...
He coined the term democide.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he's says that conservatively, in the 20th century alone, civil governments have killed 170 million of their own non-combatant people.
Right.
And that's 43 million for Stalin, 35 million for Mao, Pol Pot, who wiped out a third of his population, 2 million, just for any old reason. I mean, governments in general have been evil. And if we believe Christians are in every nation in the world, not just America, what you're asking me is a very pertinent question, because the vast majority of countries, if not the vast majority of Christians, or the majority of Christians in the world, are going to be suffering under a different sort of government than what we experience here in the United States. What is their reaction? What should it be? What is permitted? Do they have to suffer under any kind of tax? What if they have a totalitarian communist society where income is taxed at 100%? Can they revolt against that? Very pertinent questions, and I'd be happy to delve into any one of those. My short answer is, yes, they may revolt when it's wise and prudent for them to do so, but I remind them that it's not a sin to be stolen from or extorted, and that they are called at times to suffer for the faith. But if they can be free, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7:21, and they have the option to do so, and it's possible to overcome what's there, then they ought to seriously consider doing so.
And also, I think it's fair to say that when this nation has backslid away from our the meaning of our creed, our principles, it's because we're not true to ourselves. Whereas the opposite could be said in many other nations of the world, when they are involved with things like abortion and democide and all these death cultures, that's exactly what they're all about. I mean, they're actually quite true to it. So, the question is, how do we bring our nation back to its even keel, and how do we again remind the American people that things like freedom and liberty don't grow on trees, but that they need to be exercised, and that self-rule and sovereignty is something that one has to practice. You don't just, because if you don't, and if you allow a vacuum to exist, then fulfilling that vacuum is going to be demonic forces.
just bring the Declaration of Independence into a college classroom as I have, and just watch the consternation that comes across from these publicly schooled students and other people. It is amazing to me that when in South America I could bring the Declaration and it looked like a beam of bright light to these people, like a dream. They couldn't imagine that people could actually speak this way and have these sort of ideals. And here you bring it into the American classroom, and at least half the students are going to begrudgingly listen. They'll probably send complaint notices to the dean or raise their hand in some sort of derogatory manner, speaking against the Declaration, against even bringing up such an archaic, static, nasty old document. When this truly is the greatest document, I imagine, philosophically, that was ever produced. And Thomas Jefferson, if we carry him further than that, if you read what else he said, one revolution isn't enough. I mean, these government folks are going to come and get involved, and they're going to take more power. They're going to become more corrupt. It's going to get bigger. It's going to get dirtier. And you need to have a revolution every 20 years. And that's the kind of thing that nobody wants to hear, but this was the philosophy of some of our greatest founding fathers, like George Mason and Patrick Henry and Jefferson, of course.
I mean, absolutely. And the irony is that, you know, if you go to an American classroom today, you're not going to find a copy of the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, but that it is written in such a clear and such an unvarnished style that a teenager could sit down and read the whole thing and understand it in its entirety. What people get now is a lot of jargon and a lot of double talk and a lot of extra meaning. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about something here that really brings things down to its essence, which is that the laws of the land have to be clear and easily understood. You know, now when you have legislatures passing laws, these laws can take up a whole, look like a telephone book. And, I mean, they don't read them. I mean, they're written by code-writing lawyers, and there's all kinds of things in there. I mean, I would think that a reasonable idea would be to have every law that's voted on by Congress or by state legislatures, that the law should be one or maybe no more than 3 pages, and it should be published in the newspaper so people can read it.
Very, very good idea. Of course, what we found from our study of public choice economics ever since James Buchanan won the Nobel for it in 1986, and it's just exploded into the whole theoretical arena, is that a lot of times the government, the legislature or the executive branch, will do things for its own self-interest. And the old idea that we'd have these noble statesmen that would come in and pass these sorts of legislative acts in order to benefit the public interest has just been destroyed, as we see not only corruption and payoffs. Just look at the Clinton administration for good recent examples of this kind of stuff going on.
Right.
That this isn't, by the way, only Bill Clinton. It wouldn't have only been Al Gore. And we're talking about an essential characteristic of all modern governments, even in the United States. And it's just an awful thing. It's an anathema to anybody who knows anything about the founding of this great country and what we've deteriorated and degenerated into.
Okay, we're going to take another brief break. My guest is John Coben. The book is Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. John, when we come back, please remind me that I want you to let people know how to get your book.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Direct from Beijing, it's CRI News with Keith Perron, weeknights at 6:30. Tune in for news and features from China, then let Keith and the staff at CRI know how you like their program by emailing them at usbox@cri.com.cn. That's CRI News, brought to you by China Radio International, weeknights at 6:30 here on AM 950, Well, Boston, the voice of Boston.
Salem Radio Commentary. The National Religious Broadcasters, with its 1,500 members representing millions of viewers, listeners, and readers, just concluded their 60th annual convention in Nashville, Tennessee. This year's theme was Changing World, Unchanging Message. President Bush addressed the convention. He spoke of the power of faith and of the upcoming potential war against Saddam Hussein, telegraphing a message of hope to the Iraqi people by saying that freedom is coming soon. Dr. Frank Wright, formerly with the D. James Kennedy Center for Christian Statesmanship, became the new president of NRB. Dr. Wright says, We at NRB are committed to proclaiming the good news of eternal life through faith in Jesus Christ, to transforming the culture through clear application of biblical truth, and to preserving religious liberty by keeping the doors of electronic media open to the spread of the gospel. May God bless Dr. Frank Wright as he leads NRB into the 21st century. I'm Janet Parshall.
Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 7 p.m., it's the liveliest music around. It's the Irish Hit Parade on AM 950 WROL Boston. Every Saturday morning starting at 10 a.m., we bring you the best in contemporary and traditional Irish music from Ireland and North America, plus news of events in the area. It's like St. Patrick's Day every Saturday. Tune in the Irish Hit Parade Saturday starting at 10 a.m. here on AM 950 WROL Boston.
Thundering out of Boston comes a new voice on radio and in print, Chuck Morse. Chuck Morse is Boston's conservative radio voice of reason. Enjoy and experience the political and social commentary from an insightful conservative, Chuck Morse. Read one of Chuck Morse's many books, Thunder Out of Boston, or Why I'm a Right-Wing Extremist, the collected columns of Chuck Morse. Difference between us and them, a look at how America confronts the Islamic leftist axis. Or Chuck's latest book, The Gramsci Factor, 59 Socialists in Congress. Learn more about Chuck Morse or order one of his many books at www.chuckmorse.com. Thundering out of Boston, it's the new voice of radio, Chuck Morse, Boston's radio voice of reason.
AM 950 WROL Boston has Boston Talking, Monday through Friday. At 2 p.m., it's the Dean of Talk, Jerry Williams. At 3 p.m., it's former Boston Mayor Ray Flynn. At 5 p.m., it's Chuck Morse, the voice of reason. And at 7 p.m. from SRN, it's the Hugh Hewitt Show. We're WROL, AM 950, the voice of Boston.
Informative talk for informed people. Now, back to the Chuck Morse Show, the radio voice of reason, on WROL AM 950.
And that would be I, Chuck Morse. My guest is John Coben. He's the author of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. John, how do people get the book?
Well, right now, the only way that you can get it is off the website, policyofliberty.net. It's all one word, policyofliberty.net. And when you're on the page, you'll see the logo there for Alertness Books. This is actually the first radio show of a number of that are planned and already scheduled in the next month. The book will not be in bookstores until the 25th of March in paperback. Yes, but you can get it off the website in paperback, so I'd encourage you to visit there. If anybody doesn't have an opportunity to do that, I encourage you just to drop me a line, and I'll be happy to send you a free information kit and a brochure about the book. You can either email me at alertness at policyofliberty.net, or you can send a letter to P.O. Box 25686 in Greenville, South Carolina, 29616. It's P.O. Box 25686, Greenville, South Carolina, 29616.
And the website for Alertness Books is?
Policyofliberty.net. Okay. There's a link to it right at the top. You can't miss it when you're there.
And you've got a number of things there as well. You've written some books already that deal with this issue.
Yeah, I have some other books. I did a primer on modern themes on free market economics and policy. I also have a book on pro-life policy, Perspective for Liberty and Human Rights, as well as a number of other articles. I did some work in property rights and what's called allodialism and building regulation. This is the only book, Bible and Government, that we're talking about today that actually has a distinctly Christian bent to it. All the other have been fairly standard legal studies in property rights and in economics.
Let me just digress a little bit. You mentioned one of those hot-button words, allodialism, that sort of has a lot of patriot mythology around it. What is the allodial land rights?
Allodialism is a system of property rights, much like the King of England had under the common law, where property or real property, like land, things that are attached to it, could be owned apart from any kind of regulation, without any overlord, and without any taxes, obviously. What's interesting about allodialism for our country is that when the founders started the United States, or when they started and envisioned America as it is, the idea was that they were going to throw off the feudal chains. They weren't going to be subject to the king anymore. The king may have granted the land, but he lost it in the war, and now rights would be allodial. And many constitutions today in the states still have the word. They're trying to get rid of it out of the Wisconsin Constitution now. A man's been emailing me trying to get some help on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Pennsylvania still has it in their constitution in New York. Pennsylvania has it in a number of court cases if it's not still in the Constitution. Just going from memory, I didn't bring the citations of all the constitutions. Hawaii comes to mind. Anyway, there are a number of states, as well as our early law, which indicate that property rights and real property rights in the United States were allodial, and they were not feudal. That's completely gone away now. The word allodial is used to mean feudal. It's completely been bastardized and transformed and retransformed and convoluted so that we no longer have anything close to an allodial system. In fact, if you read some of the court cases out of, I remember, Colorado Supreme Court and a few others, it's very clear that the state is now the what's called the Lord Paramount, or the Lord of the Soil, and that it, in fact, acts as the feudal lord or baron or earl, or whatever you want to call him, over all the land. And if you don't pay your taxes and don't abide by the regulation, then it reverts back to the true owner.
But yet the Founding Fathers, they did clearly understand allodial rights. And just to reiterate, what it is that it's your right to private ownership of property without any encumbrances by the state whatsoever.
That's right. It's an absolute form of ownership in that sense. The same way you'd own your bicycle, you can paint it any color you want. You can ride it if you want. You can burn it if you want. You can bend it if you want. You know, you can do anything you want. Whereas, you know, with here in the United States now, we have, for the most part, a lot of regulation and, of course, taxes on the property.
Well, I mean, at the same time, I mean, the allodial principle, is that, is there not some checks and balances to that in terms of a community interest, a city or town, not to say a state, but like, for example, I mean, you know, it probably was understood that you can't do anything with your property because it could interfere with the property rights of your neighbors.
Well, if you did that, you would have a tort issue or some other issue. But how it was handled is quite interesting. When I was in West Virginia, you know, doing my doctoral thesis, I went and looked in the county courthouse there in Charleston. You'll find in the archives an original document by George Washington, whose family at least owned a huge tract of land there. And in order to protect the property rights of others, they put contractual requirements that you must plant a certain kind of English grass, that you have to have so many apple trees of a certain variety every acre, that the chimney must be made out of stone or brick and not out of wood, and a whole plethora of things that were done by markets. And when property rights are secure and absolute, it doesn't mean that you're going to have automatically some kind of chaotic condition where other people are adversely affected.
Right.
In the market, contracts are there, agreements between people are there and enforced in law in order to prevent that from happening. We find that attached to real property will come these sorts of contractual arrangements that protect people.
Sort of like covenantal things.
Yes.
But, of course, they also would have to square with the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, otherwise, you know, you could have, you know, people could build whorehouses.
Well, but in a sense, you might want them to be able to do that. And I'll tell you why. It sounds kind of crazy at first, even though you and I would find that very repugnant. But what if you had a Las Vegas area of allodial land, and the people out there were willing to sell to people by contract only to people who have brothels? And so people who really wanted that will all sort of flock to that area. It would leave the areas elsewhere in the country completely free of that sort of activity, and it might be a better solution than trying to prohibit it outright. So
that sort of, in a sense, does work, even though there's state involvement, because, yes, in like Nevada, you have that because the people of Nevada elect state legislators who vote for it because that's what they want, whereas I think Utah is dry because that's what the people there want. So, I mean, I suppose that could be an interference in private rights, but nevertheless, is there not at least local, if not state,
regulation on such issues.
Yes, and there would be to some extent, but what's also interesting is the government itself has an ultimate an incredible check on it by allodial property, because the government itself wouldn't necessarily be able to own its land in an absolute sense. And so if it ever became oppressive or opposed to the people or opposed to its principles, the people who had allodial rights might even be able to take, say the lease is no longer here for the IRS building to occupy this square of land any longer. There are all sorts of interesting conclusions that can come out of having allodial rights. I know that we're way off the topic for today, but it's interesting
because it's one of those words and one of those issues that comes up, and this is a great opportunity to learn something here for everybody. The other thing with allodial rights is that our properties are inextricably tied to each other because we all share sewer systems and electrical systems and, infrastructure, roads, all of it. There has to be some means of paying for those things.
That's true. And, of course, it's pretty clear from the research that's been done by a lot of economists that those things can all be provided by markets. There's no reason to believe that we couldn't have a set of tolling or a set of private firms like competing for some places that do trash service today or telecommunications services providing all of those things. The problem we really have is how do you get from what we got today to a more market-based system with less government? That's really tough, because what do you do with the current property rights system? Would you just give it to the people? Who owns the road? You just dole it out to people? Do you sell it to the highest bidder? Those are more difficult questions in economics, and the transition costs are high. But when you go towards socialism, lock, stock, and barrel, like we've done since FDR, and really, since Lincoln, we've started on this path downward into socialism, well, it's hard to just, get out. And not only that, we've had the public school system backing socialism up for so many years now that it's sort of ingrained. I go to, when I teach in courses in economics, I ask people if they realize that we didn't used to have payroll deductions, we didn't used to have Social Security, that there was no income tax.
Right.
And they just can't believe it. They think I'm telling them, fairy tales or fantasy stories. Americans just have no concept of the history of their own nation.
Okay, we're going to take another brief break. My guest is John Corbin. The book is Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. You're welcome to join us, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
If you're overweight, you're not alone. Do something about it. Introducing Slim Patch, a great new weight loss product from Europe. Slim Patch is totally natural. You eat as you normally do, but with Slim Patch, you'll feel full sooner and avoid cravings between meals. Slim Patch is easy to use. Just apply one patch per day until you reach your goal. No pills, no shakes, no problem. It works. You'll see results in your first week. How does it work? It absorbs through the skin and gives you the sensation of being full. You eat less, you lose weight. No one needs to know you're using Slim Patch. No hiding your shake in the back of the fridge or gulping your pills down before lunch. Apply Slim Patch to a discreet part of your body and start losing weight right away. Don't wait any longer. Now is the time to get on the right track.
Call 888-55-PATCH. Ask how to receive a 30-day supply absolutely free with your order. Call toll-free 1-888-557-2824. Lose 12 to 20 pounds this month at 1-888-55-PATCH. That's 1-888-55-PATCH.
If you're among the many who have a less than perfect credit rating, you know full well that a missed or late payment can cost you a lot more money, time, and aggravation when trying to apply for or refinance a mortgage. But at Full Spectrum Lending, we don't think that should ever be the case. Rather than penalize you for past credit problems, Full Spectrum wants to help you use your home's equity to consolidate bills, lower your monthly payments, or even put extra cash in your pocket. Full Spectrum can offer loans to borrowers who require more flexibility because of self-employment, high consumer debt, or tarnished credit. And because they're affiliated with the nation's largest independent residential mortgage lender, Full Spectrum can offer a great selection of competitively priced, fixed and adjustable rate loans and home equity lines of credit. Give them a call at 888-777-9831 for a free, no-obligation home loan consultation. That's 888-777-9831.
Today's Talk for Adults.
Informative talk.
Issues that matter to you.
We are the voice of Boston.
We are AM 950.
Informative talk from the radio voice of reason. Back to the Chuck Moore Show, right here on WROL, AM 950.
And we are back. John Copens, my guest. The book is Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. So, John, what do Christians do with certain of these enormous and quite, as you quite accurately point out, socialistic agencies like public education and welfare? I mean, how do you deal with it, like, in your own life?
Well, that's really the point of the whole book. We've spent still talking about more abstract things. The book is extremely practical. In fact, in the conclusion, I even go so far as to list a number of places a Christian, as a Christian in America, should work or shouldn't work, should participate in or not participate in. And what I do is I give the Christians really a toolkit they haven't had heretofore, and that's how to understand public policy as a category. There are basically four kinds of public policy. One is reactive policy or defensive policy. That's things that we would normally think of as military, criminal justice, maybe inoculations against attacks from or invasions of predators, of microorganisms, things like that. Then you have inefficient provision policies, and this is the whole plethora of things like the post office or the county recorder or the county mechanic. Things that could easily be done by markets and are done by markets.
Of course, some of those things have been with us since the founding of the Republic.
That's true. And our post office,
I mean, I think the post office is in the Constitution.
It sure is.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't swear by that particular phrase of the Constitution, because I don't see any point in having the...
I actually think they've done a pretty good job.
At any rate.
For 35 cents, you can send a letter anywhere in the world. But
okay.
Anyway.
All right. At any rate, those kinds of policies of inefficient provision. Now, we can argue whether or not government's really efficient in having building inspectors and really efficient in having all the other things that they do, the services they provide. They aren't necessarily difficulties for Christians, because they don't really have moral consequences whether or not you go there or somewhere else to buy the particular good or service. It's only an efficiency and stewardship issue, whether or not they really provide it at the cheapest price. Just because government produces hamburger, for instance, doesn't mean it's good if they force you to buy it, for $100 a pound.
Right.
But at any rate, then there is a whole other category of public policy, another proactive policies. And proactive policies are two varieties. One would be the proactive policies aimed at changing behavior, such as gun control laws, such as seatbelt laws, airbag requirements, number of things like that. And there are proactive policies aimed at redistribution, and that would be Social Security, welfare, student grants, and some student loans, things along that line, food stamps. I think once we can categorize a policy, it's easier for us as Christians to say, well, we can see biblically that we can defend reactive policy. We should support that. And we say a whole lot, or it's arguable about these inefficient provision policies. But as far as proactive stuff, gun control on the other two, welfare and food stamps and so forth, we have to reject that. We can't work for those agencies. We can't voluntarily pay for them. If they force us to pay for them, that's one thing. We can't voluntarily do it. We can't voluntarily go and apply for benefits. I think Christians are doing a great disservice, even a sinful activity, by trying to collect welfare benefits.
What about public schools?
Well, that's also aimed right at proactive policy. To me, a public school, from its impetus, has been evil. It's been something that's gone out to change behavior, to totally mold the minds away from God, away from the American way of what's right and wrong, or philosophy of what's right and wrong. And it also is very extortive in that it forces people to pay for these schools. It forces children to attend through a compulsory education, and gives them a whole agenda of the left, essentially, from its inception.
But I couldn't agree with you more, but the issue is that if people become aware of that, could not local cities and towns and people living in communities with their sons and daughters go to school, couldn't they take back their schools and introduce a moral education?
Well, this is an interesting point, and it's a good point. In my perspective, and I'd be willing to be educated on this myself, but the way I see the public school is it is so far beyond being transformable. It's the equivalent of a modern whorehouse a prostitution house or a modern abortion clinic.
Yeah.
There's really no good use for the thing, and therefore it's better just to abandon the thing.
Well, I mean, my good friend Dr. Samuel Blumenfeld agrees with you, and he's a regular on mine. He's written any a Trojan horse in American education.
I do like him, and I like his writing.
Okay, we have, we're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back. My guest is John Coben. Once again, the book is Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, Alertness Books. We'll be right back.
AM 950 has Boston talking with the Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights at 7.
So we got five teenagers, 14 and older, 14 and 50. Two groups starting two big fights. What do you do with them?
What I would do, Hugh, is put them to work on a fire cleanup. Take them in and let them see a burn unit. Let them see a burn victim.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights at 7, AM 950, WROL. Changing the way Boston talks.
Everyone who's ever started a diet wants the same results. They want to be thin tomorrow. Guess what? It probably didn't happen. But if you want to get thin quickly, safely, and permanently, then you need Judy Singer's Metasystem. For over 20 years, that's a long time, the Metasystem has been delivering results. And in a weight loss world full of big claims and overnight sensations, a 20-year history is a big deal. The Metasystem is an herbal formula with no jittery stimulants. And here's the best part. You're never alone with the Metasystem. It's customized to fit your exact goals and lifestyle. The Metasystem's unique phone counseling services help you adjust the amount and time you take the formula to give you an amazing and personalized result. It won't happen overnight, but it will happen a lot faster than you can imagine, and your weight loss will last. But you have to call the Metasystem at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY. Don't buy into hype. Buy results. Call the Metasystem at 1-800-711-JUDY. The Metasystem. Meta. It's just better.
Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 7 p.m., it's the liveliest music around. It's the Irish Hit Parade on AM 950 WRL Boston. Every Saturday morning starting at 10 a.m., we bring you the best in contemporary and traditional Irish music from Ireland and North America, plus news of events in the area. It's like St. Patrick's Day every Saturday. Tune in the Irish Hit Parade Saturdays starting at 10 a.m. here on AM 950 WRL Boston.
Today's Talk for Adults. Informative talk.
Issues that matter to you.
We are the voice of Boston.
We are AM 950.
Now, back to the Chuck Moore Show. The radio voice of reason on WROL AM 950.
And we are back. John Coben's my guest. The book is Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. John, your book is going to be like, really like a manual for people in terms of what to look for and what not, and how to make basic and fundamental changes, or how to, in a sense, undo the changes that have been made and return us to much more of a sovereign and free state.
That's right, and in fact, it does even more than that for people, because I think I'm destroying certain myths that people have about the state that our founders understood quite clearly. It's been attributed to George Washington. I don't know, it may not actually be he who said it, but on the back of the book I write here what he is purported to have said: government is not reason, it's not eloquence, it is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. And the founding fathers realized, when they did just an amazing job coming out of feudalism and not really being able to envision what freedom would be like, they had to establish a republic where government was so vastly limited that all it would really do is protect us from predators. Anything beyond that, we didn't want government to be involved with, unless it was a limited extent, like the post office, as you mentioned earlier. And Christians need to realize that government in its nature is like fire. And I point out in the scriptures, 90% of the occasions that it occurs outside the theocracy, it's spoken of as evil. Public policy is it's an evil thing. Government is maybe a necessary evil, but it is still an evil. And if you let it get out of control, it will destroy you. Don't expect the kingdom of God or blessings to come at the hand of the state. That's the thing, an apparatus you want there for defensive purposes only. And once
but nevertheless, don't we want to have the government involved in ensuring that there are some basic moral standards observed in a community?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure that government can do that. If it can, it has to be at a local level where the founding fathers wisely put the common law that it should all be sought after and done at a local county or at the, you know, at the most a state level. Right. Because if you try to impose from a federal level certain standards on people, you're going to have tyranny and oppression and all sorts of corruption creep in. And I think you still will at a state level. Those kind of community standards need to be decided by communities. I don't think there's a way you can impose them from the top.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. That's the concept of subsidiarity, and I think the founding fathers viewed the highest office holder in the land as the county sheriff in
right.
terms of actual enforcement, and that the federal government was involved in very specific things that are in the Constitution, and when it came to questions of morality, they were there as sort of what Teddy Roosevelt called the bully pulpit.
Mm.
But not there with with the actual enforcement power.
Mm.
And that did change with Lincoln and the Civil War. It's an interesting subject. I'm going to be doing a show on that coming up with Tom DiLorenzo,
mm.
who's deconstructing Lincoln. But things from that point did seem to start to centralize, and there was a move toward the the abolition of sovereign rights and local rights in replacement for federal power.
If you not to get off on another tangent, but the subject of Lincoln is so controversial, and I think we're so brainwashed by our public schooling. When I actually delved into it and began to see and uncover, as Tom I think has done as well, what
yeah.
Lincoln was really all about, you begin to see that this guy was probably, if not the most evil president we've ever had, he may be the second most, next to FDR. And that's a strong, bold statement, but trust me, if you begin to look at what was really happening, from packing the Supreme Court and adding a 10th Amendment, to giving Butler the right to rape order, to the fact that he didn't even free all the slaves. I mean, it happened in the middle of the war, and he only freed the slaves in the South. He didn't free any Kentucky and Maryland and West, what became West Virginia, Missouri, Delaware. They all had slavery because they were loyal to him. He was just trying to cause insurrection. He couldn't care less about the slaves. I mean, it's all a myth that needs to be exploded. I'm sure Tom will do a far better job than I could of it. But I was
yeah.
I was appalled by my own education growing up in Southern California, that I was fed basically a bunch of bull from the public school system that was just purely fabrications and lies.
No, I mean, I'm not quite ready to go that far with it. I mean, I still think he was dealing with the greatest crisis in American history. And I don't think any president would have done differently. I mean, every president has stood up against secession, all the way from Washington with the whiskey rebellion to Lincoln and since. But nevertheless, there were some extreme measures taken. And by understanding those, perhaps we could begin to rescind them. Anyway, John Coben, I want to thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
It's been my pleasure. The book is Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. And we're going to go to news. We'll be back. I think we're going to be talking about the Rhode Island fire. We shall return after this.
Thundering out of Boston comes a new voice on AM 950, WROL Boston, a service of Salem Communications. Today's Talk for Adults, informative talk, issues that matter to you.
We are the voice of Boston.
We are AM 950.
AM 950, WROL Boston, a service of Salem Communications.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. The death toll from that Rhode Island nightclub fire has risen to 95. Searchers say they have recovered all of the victims' bodies. Now they'll try to identify the victim.
I want everyone to understand we are bringing to bear all the resources we can to get identification as rapidly as we can for the families impacted.
Rhode Island Governor Donald Carcheri says a couple of investigations are underway. The fast-moving blaze at the station in West Warwick was touched off by pyrotechnics used by a rock band inside the building. The 60-year-old structure was not required to have sprinklers and also had no permit for fireworks. Some people on Staten Island, New York, felt the ground shake today when a barge blew up. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg says it happened while fuel was being unloaded at a storage depot on Staten Island.
The barge that exploded has sunk. We don't know how much
how much of the gasoline has burnt and how much is still in the barge underwater.
One worker was killed, another is badly burned. Bloomberg says there is no sign of any foul play in the explosion. Even if the second transplant operation is a success, the outlook is not good for a 17-year-old girl at a North Carolina hospital. Doctors now say that she has severe brain damage. It appears to be permanent. A NASA safety engineer sounded the warning just days before Shuttle Columbia broke up. The engineer warned that the shuttle was at risk for a devastating breach near its left wheel, and he suggested that NASA officials were not taking the risk seriously. NASA released the engineer's email earlier today. On Wall Street, the Dow was up about 103 points, closing at 8018, the NASDAQ ahead by almost 18 points. This is SRN News.
If you're overweight, you're not alone. Do something about it. Introducing Slim Patch, a great new weight loss product from Europe. Slim Patch is totally natural. You eat as you normally do, but with Slim Patch, you'll feel full sooner and avoid cravings between meals. Slim Patch is easy to use. Just apply one patch per day until you reach your goal. No pills, no shakes, no problem. It works. You'll see results in your first week. How does it work? It absorbs through the skin and gives you the sensation of being full. You eat less, you lose weight. No one needs to know you're using Slim Patch. No hiding your shake in the back of the fridge or gulping your pills down before lunch. Apply Slim Patch to a discreet part of your body and start losing weight right away. Don't wait any longer. Now is the time to get on the right track.
Call 888-55-PATCH. Ask how to receive a 30-day supply absolutely free with your order. Call toll-free 1-888-557-2824. Lose 12 to 20 pounds this month at 1-888-55-PATCH. That's 1-888-55-PATCH.
You can add Montana to the list of states where same-sex marriage is now up for debate. Details from SRN News correspondent Gary Beausoleil.
A bill before the state legislature would strip all references to gender from laws regulating marriage partners, a move which would clear the way for legalized same-sex couplings with the same rights as traditional marriage. Pro-family groups are fighting back, though. Julie Milliam with the Montana Family Coalition says any nation that places more importance on the guarantee of unfettered sexual license than on marriage and children is slowly but surely undermining its own survival. Gary Beausoleil, SRN News.
Interfaith memorial services scheduled in major cities worldwide to mark the anniversary of the killing of Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. Pearl was kidnapped and killed in Pakistan. Services in honor of Pearl are planned over the next several days. This is SRN News. It's good news for a couple of defense contractors. Linda Kenyon has details in today's SRN News Business Brief.
Two major defense firms have landed a $2 billion Pentagon contract to build laser-guided bomb kits. The Air Force awarded the seven-year contract to Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. A new report suggests prices are rising at the retail level, but not as much as they rose on the wholesale level. SRN News financial analyst Ken Franke says the consumer price index rose 0.3% in January.
Prices for many goods such as TVs and computers have dropped dramatically, while houses, medical care, and especially energy have risen.
Agilent Technologies plans to cut 4,000 jobs. That's more than 11% of its workforce. The company makes test and measurement equipment. The Dow closed up 103 points. The NASDAQ gained nearly 18 points. With business, I'm Linda Kenyon.
And from Washington, I'm Rich Thomason.
And thank you, Rich. Let's try this one more time, and thank you, Rich. You're tuned into WRL AM 950, the voice of Boston. Take a quick look at the weather forecast. For tonight, cloudy skies will go near 35 degrees. Saturday, a rainy day. High right around the 40s. And Sunday, some morning rain, then partly sunny. Highs in the low to mid-40s. Current temperature right now in downtown Boston, 48 degrees. With your WROL weather forecast, I'm Dan Huffman.
People either loathe me or they admire me.
A man can be God.
That's wacky.
Yeah.
Look, I can't get enough of your show.
I don't know how old you are, Chuck.
You think you're always right.
With sexuality's rampant.
Finally, Chuck, a show that takes a real moral stand and tells it like it is.
I'm Boston. It's time now for your radio voice of reason. It's the Chuck Moore Show on WROL AM 950, the voice of Boston. Talking Chuck, dial 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. And now, Chuck.
And that would be our Chuck Morse Open Lines segment, AM 950 WROL, the voice of Boston. 617-770-3030 if you'd like to join me. Now go to your phones, pick up that receiver, start dialing 617-770-3030, and you shall be on the air and you will be heard. We were going to try to line somebody up to talk about the Rhode Island nightclub fire, but for reasons that I think are pretty legitimate, they're busy. Let's face it. I mean, this is a horrendous tragedy, and no one can do it at such short notice. Okay, we've got Stephen on the line from Boston. Stephen, thanks for calling.
Yes, how you doing? I'm actually new to Boston, but anyhow, I have a question.
Yes.
You seem to not give much credit to the value of public school systems, and rightly so. I feel the same way. But what is your opinion about homeschooling, I guess a Christian homeschooling standpoint? My wife and I both are odd. We're both Christians, but she seems to give more value to our government. I have a two-year-old daughter. She gives more.
My wife and I are dealing with the same thing. We have a four-year-old daughter, and I feel sick over the idea of her going into those miserable public, rotten public schools.
Mm-hmm.
They've turned into, propaganda soapboxes instead of actual education centers where people can learn how to think cognitively.
Yeah.
And it's a real dilemma, I guess that where I might differ with my guest is that I think that people can take back the schools by running for their local school boards. Like, for example, yourself or your wife you're probably too busy to do it. But there are people out there, teenagers, retired people, listeners of this program, who could run for the local school board and insist that the education, to get rid of the government-run education program, and they replace it with a morally based program, and one that actually teaches people how to learn. Because after all, we have to pay for it anyways. It's coming out of our taxes.
Yeah.
So we might as well, insist that we get our money's worth. But as far as homeschooling, I think it's a great idea. You might listen on Monday night when I have Sam Blumenfeld here. He's one of the national experts on it. He's written several books on it, and I don't know if it's personally for me or not. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I have the temperament to do it, but, it's not for everybody.
Well, yeah, I have a background. I have a history degree. I have several degrees, but I'm interested in homeschooling personally. I mean, I helped with my nieces and nephews and even my sisters, and it's one of the things that I'm looking forward to doing with my two-year-old daughter in the coming future.
Well, wonderful. I mean, it's a very encouraging movement, and it's cutting across all lines ideologically. Everybody wants the same thing for their children. We all want the best education, regardless of where you're coming from. I mean, and there is definitely a sense, I think people sense it in their gut, that there's something terribly wrong, there's something terribly rotten with the public schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel the same way. One other quick question, and I'll let someone else come on. I'm interested in purchasing your book. Do you have a website?
Yes, thanks for asking. ChuckMorse.com. Morse, like as in Morse code, M-O-R-S-E.
Okay.
And my book, The Gramsci Factor, 59 Socialists in Congress, is available there or at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, that was nice. 617-770-3030, if you'd like to join us. As I had said before, we're trying to get someone on from the Rhode Island nightclub fire, somebody who's witnessed this horrendous accident, this horrible. It's unthinkable. I can't even imagine it, Dan.
It's horrible. I woke up this morning with my neurotic aunt calling me. She knows I go to a lot of
she knows
bands.
You're a club hopper. So.
Well, I go to a band. I like to see the bands, and she just called me. Are you okay? But I watched the news footage. I couldn't.
I've been out of the loop, Dan. What happened?
Well, from what I understand, apparently the band Great White was on the stage, and they started their show. It was just about 4 seconds into the show, and they had the big blast, like how many bands do.
Yeah, but not in a small club. Well, I mean, I can see that at Foxborough Stadium, maybe.
There's some confusion whether they cleared it with the club owner or not.
It's stupid.
Well, there was, you know, the stage director said he didn't know anything about it. And if you look at
somebody knew something about
it. Well, I've seen the videos. If you look at the fire, these things are literally shooting up to the ceiling. I mean, they are just...
What kind of a lame-brained... I mean, you know, this is... It's more than stupid. It's criminal.
Right.
Who decides to blow off pyrotechnics inside a small club with a low ceiling?
Well, yeah. And you just,
they're out of their mind.
You watched the footage this morning, just the people coming out of there, and they were
People didn't know what was happening.
No, they were all burned, and, you know, I saw a footage of some woman in the hospital, and she said she was lying on the floor. She thought she was as good as dead, and some guy came in, took her out over the window, and brought her outside. And he said, I have to go get more people. So that was just, you know, that was the courage of
So there's some great heroic instances. It sounds like there were stories like that came from 9/11.
Oh, yeah, it was very similar to that.
This guy went up like something like 30 steps, and he helped a woman in a wheelchair, carried her down.
I had the same eerie feeling, I tell you, this morning when I saw the news footage. It's not I couldn't come away from the screen. It was just, and I actually had a tear in my eye. It was really, really sad. It was really, really.
Well, the only thing, I mean, I didn't get to see too much news today because I was tied up, but I did pick up this morning that there was a gigantic gas fire in Staten Island.
Apparently,
that looked like a terrorist incident, but it was not. It was an accident.
And I think everybody survived from that, from what I heard. So.
But there was, the people of New York were really shaken up. I mean, Staten Island was the whole ground moved, and they evacuated areas. And you looked up, you saw this huge, massive, plume of fire and smoke.
Well,
and in this day and age, you're almost expecting something.
Right. You know, the nightclub issue. This is 2 in 1 week, and it just makes you, it just goes to show you that, in these small spaces, there really need to be, I would say, about 4 exits per wall. If you're having if you're going to have a lot of people, make sure there's enough exits to get out. Make sure people know. Maybe even do an announcement before the show.
Ray Flynn had Paul Benziquin on the other day, and he wrote the definitive book on the Coconut Grove fire of 1942. And they had doors that were not, they didn't swing out.
They were shamed.
They weren't. It's not that. It's just that they opened in, so people were panicking, and they were pressed up against the doors. And they also had revolving doors, and that was where the worst atrocities were, because people panicked, and they got stuck in those doors, and you had a lot of people that were found dead trying to push through that door. The whole thing collapsed.
It's just a horrible, horrible thing all around. I can't imagine the families, what they're going through. The death toll keeps rising. 95 right now is the current death toll. And, what the parents are going through, and the kids and the families.
It's an unbelievable story. It's an international story. And, we're all kind of so hair trigger right now, waiting for a nuclear biological attack, that it's almost like,
well, at this rate, we're doing it to ourselves.
Yeah,
it's nightclub. They don't really need to do too much, to tell you the truth.
I guess not. I mean, how did you feel about, I don't know if you saw Secretary of Homeland Defense Tom Ridge and his wife gave an interview where they said that all Americans should get prepared.
I saw that, yeah.
For some sort of a chemical thing. He said, forget the duct tape, but
I think it's
referred to having some sort of a kit. I don't know exactly what he meant.
I think it's a good idea because...
Do you have one?
I don't have a kit yet just because I haven't gotten out of the stores. I take the tea everywhere, Chuck, and by the time I get out of work, all the stores are closed.
Okay.
But this weekend, I do plan to go make myself just a little kit. He just says, it's just simple things. Water, food, non-perishable food items, smart stuff that you should have anyways around your house. Stuff that you can survive in. He said... And also have the duct tape and plastic on hand. You don't need it right now, but just in case you need it. Just smart, sensible things that Americans should be doing anyways.
Although, I did a program on this. I think you remember it. In fact, you booked the guest, and we talked about it. And he said that isn't going to help matters, the plastic on the windows.
Yeah.
He said it might make you feel better, but it doesn't do much.
Right.
I know that... I have cousins in Israel, and they had, during the first Gulf War, they isolated one room, I think all Israelis did, isolated one room in the house with all plastic and food and gas masks and everything else, and I think they know what they're doing over there.
But I think there's going to be a big investigation, not only in the Boston area, but all around the country of these nightclubs now. find out, you know, which ones are really safe. Because now I know when I step foot in a club now, I'm going to look where those exits are. Apparently the power went out within 3 minutes of the fire starting. So by the time, you know, those exit
signs... So you mean the fire, the impact and the heat of the fire just burned up the
electrical system? Well, the exit signs are supposed to be ran by battery anyways, but it was so hot anyways that they melted, it doesn't do anybody any good. So, you know, I think there's going to be a big investigation. There needs to be. And I think there should be about clubs all around the area. What's just not safe to be in, you know?
The largest fire, I think, since the Coconut Grove fire.
That's what they're saying.
Which was in 1942.
And, you know, I hope, you know, the terrorists now may see this and say, wow, that's a good idea. You know, maybe that's where to go now. And just a scary thought all around.
Well, I'm sure that they do know that. Anyway, we're going to take a break. You're welcome to join us. Open lines, 617-770-3030. What is on your mind this evening? We'll be right back.
AM 950 WROL Boston has Boston Talking, Monday through Friday. At 2 p.m., it's the Dean of Talk, Jerry Williams. At 3 p.m., it's former Boston Mayor Ray Flynn. At 5 p.m., it's Chuck Morse, the voice of reason. And at 7 p.m. from SRN, it's the Hugh Hewitt Show. We're WROL, AM 950, the voice of Boston.
Fun, relaxed, enjoyable? Not the words you'd pick to describe buying a car, unless you happen to be at Ira Dodge of Medford.
You always hear about how stressful the whole process was, and I think a lot of places overlook the importance of offering a relaxed environment like ours. This is Gary Goldstein, General Sales Manager at Ira Dodge in Medford, Massachusetts. We always like introducing people to a happier and better way of buying or taking care of a car. We put you at ease by treating you the way we'd want to be treated and making the process as comfortable as we can. We strive daily to give you that peace of mind out on the lot, on the phone when you call us, in the service area, or in the showroom.
Head over to the Big Dodge sign at 104 Mystic Avenue in Medford to see and experience it for yourself.
When you treat customers the way you treat your family, it translates into a win-win situation for everyone.
Call Ira Dodge of Medford at 781-393-4400.
Bring your family to meet our family here at Ira Dodge in Medford.
104 Mystic Avenue, just a half mile from Medford Square.
Today's Talk for Adults.
Informative talk.
Issues that matter to you.
We are the voice of Boston.
We are AM 950.
Informative talk from the radio voice of reason. Back to the Chuck Moore Show right here on WROL AM 950.
And we are back. You're welcome to join us in the final segment, 617-770-3030. This just in off of the UP wires.
Of the AP.
AP wire. The young girl who had a transplant, a lung and heart transplant, with a wrong blood type. They did another transplant today. And she's apparently alive,
right.
But there's reports of brain damage.
Yeah, she suffered brain damage. Just refusing the organ she was given.
I see. But she's apparently, I mean, all systems are stable. I mean, she's okay in terms of...
The doctors aren't releasing too much information because of the family's sensitivity right now, but they just said that she has suffered brain damage and there's no other information right now.
And that might have come from a deprivation of oxygen.
Right.
Which is what usually does that.
Yeah. It's, you know, when someone gets brain damage like that, it's a pretty bad thing to go through. I went through it in my family,
right.
And you know, it's just a traumatic time for everybody.
No, it's awful.
It's depressing day to day. There's no good news.
No, it's awful. But at the same time, I mean, I don't generally delve into medical issues, but you know, being a talk show host, I've done them, and I know something. I mean, you kind of dabble, and it's my understanding that the brain is a very resilient organ. It regenerates itself. There have been situations where somebody has recovered from a lobotomy. I mean, you can remove a part of the brain, and it actually grows back into the skull. So, I mean, if she's going to live and she's going to stabilize, then not all hope is lost.
Right.
It's going to be a long...
Well...
She's a young girl.
In my family, we experienced it, and we were told that the person who had brain damage was never going to walk, talk, live again. And we watched this person go through this. It was my mother, I can say it was my mother. And we watched my mother go through this. And right now she's to a point where she is better. I mean, she's not 100%. She can't go out and get a job, but she can still speak. I spoke to her the other day, and I said, Mom, how is everything going? She goes, I'm having a wonderful time, honey. I said, okay, well, that's terrific. And,
fantastic. So she's quite cognizant of her surroundings, and she knows who's who.
Her speech is sort of still like a three-year-old speech you would expect, but, you know, she's carrying on.
So thank God. I mean, it's just, you know, it shows that that there's hope there. And I think we might have a call in the final few minutes of the program. No? 617-770-3030. 617-770-3030. A lot of weighty issues to delve in today. By the way, Monday I'll be joined by David Boeker, I think his name is. He is the author of a book called about the Middle East. He's also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. So that might be interesting. And Anthony and Sam will be here as well. All right, we've got Fred on the line. Fred, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I really liked the guest you had on today.
Oh, thank you. Wasn't that good?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, John Coben. He was very good. The Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah. I think we need more people like him on the air.
Well, you know, that's he's genuinely an interesting mix of a libertarian and a conservative.
That's what I am.
So we're getting. I got to run because we got like three calls. Thank you so much, Fred. Call again when we have more time to chat.
Okay.
All right. We've got Stephen on the line from Boston. Stephen, thanks for. Oh no, never mind. We got Lynn on the line from Chelsea. Lynn, thanks for calling.
Hi. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And I was thinking about your that last caller that you had yesterday on the diversity show.
Yes.
That woman.
Yes.
And I could. It's such a difficult issue because first she said that not to compare the situation of the African American with the heritage of slavery, not to compare it with what happened in the Soviet Union. And then she said that what the African Americans go through, that she was comparing it to other situations and saying it was the worst. And I think anyone feels that if they're feeling that they've been in. For instance, I come from an alcoholic family. We think that's the worst.
That's right. And we all have, you know, part of the human condition, we all have our crosses to bear.
Right.
You know, even you could have somebody that comes from an incredibly wealthy family, and they might have some, you know, they might have a suicide, or they might have, you know what I'm saying? It's like, we all have to deal with the vicissitudes of existence.
Right. But at the same time, it doesn't help sometimes to know that, because you're still in your own situation. So this morning, I have this daily reading that I do. It's put out by something called Presentation Ministries, and that's their website.
Right.
Out of Ohio. And today it was about the Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was right on, because that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with people that are unable to communicate with each other, unable to completely love each other. With your permission, I'll read the last paragraph.
Well, I don't know if we have time for a paragraph.
All right. Basically, it said the problem of unity. Did God want disunity? Yes. At Babel, He gave us disunity because people were like too proud to accept that He was Lord.
Right.
But then at Pentecost, that was changed, when the apostles went out and spoke in tongues and everybody understood them.
Right.
And that now we're working towards unity.
At the same time, I think that the message of Babel was that there would be separate sovereignties and that man would retain separate governments, so that there would never be an attempt to overthrow God in heaven.
Right. Okay, so, I'm not going to disagree with that, but I'm just going to say that the ideal in the end times would be that we would have unity.
I agree with that, but to me that has to be a miracle with a Moshiach.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Not a man-made unit.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely.
Right.
Yeah, under the sovereignty.
Definitely.
Okay, thank you.
Lynn, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, and thank you. Have a good weekend, everybody. I shall return, God willing, Monday evening at 5 p.m. Also next week on Tuesday I'll be joined by Dori Gold, who is a Israeli Knesset member, very influential in the Oslo Accords and kind of against it. He was a good conservative. And he's going to give us, he's just written a book, and I'm looking forward to that. And got a bunch of other things cooking in the pipeline this week. Dan?
Yes?
Say something brilliant.
Well, there's an old... This comes from our president. This is a saying from our President Bush. He goes,
okay.
There's an old saying in Texas. He knows it's in Tennessee, but it's probably in Texas, too. He goes, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, can't get fooled again.
Good for him.
Yeah, that's our President Bush. So we can...
Well, you know, let's hope that and pray that we have strong leadership in this government because we are heading into a war, I think. I think happening.
Most definitely.
And we can all, we all should pray that, the thing is swift and ends quickly and with the least loss of all life. And, you know, what else can you say? It's out of our hands.
Agreed.
We're just talk show hosts. You know, we're not, I mean, you know, we're not going to be out there doing this very difficult job. So we can pray for every single man and woman out there that that they come back in one piece.
Well, I hope so, and I pray for the families of the fire today, and of course the Chicago nightclub and that girl. Where's she out now?
I don't know.
But pray for her family as well.
I just hope. Yeah, it seems like things are stable at least.
I hope so. I hope so. I hope hope those families can recover, and hopefully the death toll doesn't rise any higher than it is in Rhode Island. So.
Right. All right, Dan. Anyway, I want to thank everyone for listening, and my name is Chuck Morris. I shall return. Good night, everybody.